Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 62. Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, and I'm David Todd from The Hammer Speaks. Dave, a little quiet time between Christmas and New Year's, but the Steelers wrapping things up their last week of practice before the playoffs. We'll see if they get a bye week. They head to Cleveland. They flex the game for a 4:15 start at Paul Brown Stadium. What are your thoughts?
Well, everybody's talking about the Ben Roethlisberger situation and the injuries going into this game. And, you know, the Browns have a few on their side as well, too. So I guess we'll kind of start with the injury report. Running back Mawaldi Moore and that MCL and his knee, along with Doug Legursky and that shoulder strain, both those guys are not going to be available on Sunday. Tomlin, seems to think that Lamar Woodley, Roethlisberger, Pouncey, and Emmanuel Sanders all have a shot at playing on.
Yeah, that was his line yesterday. Have a shot.
And what that tells me is he wants the Browns to prepare for all these guys. So, to be honest with you, I really think only Roethlisberger has the best shot of those guys mentioned to play. Jerry Dulac came out yesterday and said that he's heard that they want Ben to get about 25 to 30 snaps in against the Browns. That's not out of the question, especially if he's able to practice, you know, at least full on Thursday and Friday. So the injury report will tell us a little bit more about that. Marquise Pouncey, I don't know if I would really, you know, play him on that ankle. Let's face it, with Legursky being banged up now and Pouncey in that ankle and the ankle issues in the past with him, we'll watch the practice report this week. And even if he does play, I wouldn't expect too many snaps from him. I really wouldn't expect Emmanuel Sanders to get much work either, along with Lamar Woodley and his hamstring. Maybe just enough to heat up that hamstring on Woodley. But, you know, outside of this is a game the Steelers need or could need if the Bengals do their job on Sunday and take care of the Ravens. And I would like to see Roethlisberger get some work in, you know, because let's face it, if the Steelers somehow win this game, or if they win this game and the Bengals end up winning, you're going to get a first-round bye there, and you could actually have a scenario then where Ben hasn't taken a snap on the offense for 4 weeks. So, you know, we'll have to think about that. You know, of course, you know, he's getting his reps in practice, I'm sure, heading up into it, but I would like to see him get a little bit of work. I know a lot of people won't agree with me on that. One interesting thing to note, the Steelers did sign John Malecki, the former Pitt guy who was with them during training camp this year and had spent the early part of the season on the practice squad. He was re-signed to the practice squad on earlier in the week there. One thing to look for maybe as a roster move, being as how Chris Carter has not shown up on the injury report this week, you could see Malecki signed to the 53-man roster on Saturday and someone like Morty Ivey released, and that would be a good sign to let you know whether or not Pouncey's going to play. That way Trey Essex would probably start at center and you'd have Malecki backing him up at center there. So that's kind of a recap on the injuries. You know, where do you stand on these guys?
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think, yeah, Morty Ivey or Al Woods would be the obvious guy, or maybe even the offensive guard that they've signed during the season would be the guy if Malecki gets brought up to the roster. And that's a good point. We'll see what happens on Saturday and how they handle that. Tomlin did talk about in the press conference, you know, the next center. He said it was kind of between he and Doug Warren as who was gonna go in there and start snapping the ball if Trey Essex got hurt. So they certainly will want to have somebody who's ready to go. If Pouncey is not going to go, I think you're right. I think they'll probably have to make that move because I don't think they want Greg Warren snapping the ball in there in that situation. I'm sure he's going to get some reps this week, at least with the scout team. But, that's something to keep an eye on. My thoughts are the guy that I think probably won't go is Pouncey. I'm with you on that. He's had 3 weeks now, and I think, you know, a high ankle sprain can take, you know, they talk about it typically being a 3 to 4 week injury. I'd love to see Pouncey at 100% in the playoffs. The line did a decent job the past couple of weeks. Pouncey's a Pro Bowl type player, as we learned last night, as we've seen through his two two seasons here to start his career. But I would give him the time off. Woodley, you have pointed out time and again that you don't want to be rushing these guys back so that they're hurt for the playoffs. I think they will be extra cautious in terms of having him get some snaps because, you know, he has a setback here and he's pretty much done. If he has to miss 2 weeks after that, you know, we're talking AFC championship game. So if he dresses, I will go with the assumption that he's 100%. And I'm sure if he feels even the slightest twinge, while he's out there, which can always happen, even if you feel like you're 100%, then he'll take himself out of the game. So I think they'll be careful with him. I think the guy who might be back this week is Manny Sanders. I'd like to see him go. I'd like to see him get, 30 plays in there, get to run the offense a little bit, maybe with Ben in the game at the same time if they work on some timing. And I think Jerry Dulac's point's right. Ben, again, they've not really called it, or I don't know how they've characterized his grade one ankle sprain, but he did play the San Francisco game, and now he will have had, more or less the quick turnaround on Saturday, but he'll basically have had 2 weeks for the Sunday 4:15 game. And, I think the way he was walking around Sunday was without a noticeable limp. So if he can walk around this week without a big limp, he can get some reps in practice, make sure he can make all the throws. Yeah, I'm all for him taking, 25, 30 snaps or playing the first half of the game. I do fall into the category again, and I'll say this. If Ben is going to play him to start the game. Have him start the game so he comes out of the warm-ups, he's ready to go, and you can then dictate the number of snaps he plays. Obviously, if you're making a decision later in the game, you don't know how many possessions you're going to have. You don't know how long you're going to have the ball. So I think if Ben's going to go, he's going to go as a starter, and you play him as long as you feel comfortable. I don't think scoreboard watching is really an important thing here. We've read all season long, we've seen more comebacks from 17-point deficits this year than there ever been in the history of the league. We almost saw two teams playing games that mattered against the Bengals and the Ravens come back last week. The Arizona was down 20 or 23 points, and they should have tied it. And Cleveland certainly had a chance to be back in the game when they were down 20 points. So I don't think scoreboard watching should dictate how the Steelers approach it with Ben. So if he's able to get some reps in practice, I would have him go the first half of the game and then make my decision from there.
Yeah, and you can formulate the game plan this week too, at least if you are going to get him those snaps. Quite a few handoffs and some short, quick passes where he's not back there. You're going to minimize the risk. Now, anything can happen. I mean, the guy can step wrong. Trey Essex can come out, too quick from the center. Ben not get out from underneath him and get his ankle stepped on that way. Just the same. But I think if you minimize some of the things that he does, some more high percentage and less shots that you're going to take, you can minimize the risk of of him re-aggravating that ankle. But I just worry about him kind of being rusty heading on into the playoffs and all without getting any work in. And even if it's only maybe 15 to 20 snaps, a couple of passes, a couple of handoffs, I'm fine with that too. And, Charlie could use the work in the second half of the game. Hopefully we get off to a big lead to him. But, like I said, with Woodley and Pouncey, I'd be more apt just to sit those guys. And I think you're right about Sanders. I think there might be a good shot with him playing this week. And I think the Wednesday and Thursday injury report, per usual, will dictate which way all that's going to go.
Well, and Dave, how about deja vu playing Cleveland the last game of the year and Ben getting absolutely clobbered and getting hurt in that game, having to come out, and then the big question mark of him in the playoffs. So I got to think, I can't remember, was that 2 or 3 years ago when that happened? You remember the play I'm talking about?
Was that the concussion one or no?
Yeah. I think it was that he got popped in the head and he was down on the field for a period of time. I can't remember exactly what the injury was. Maybe it was a knee, maybe it was a concussion. But he had to come out of the game and it was a meaningless game for the Steelers. Didn't even have the impact that this week's game will have. And you just wonder if that will be in the back of Tomlin's head when he's thinking about how he plays anybody in this game, whether it be Rashard Mendenhall, Mike Wallace, Antonio Brown, or some of the other guys. I mean, you're going to go out and try to win this football game, and that's first priority. But if the Steelers were to get a 23-7 lead in the third or fourth quarter, I wonder if that will dictate at all how he manages his personnel.
How crushing, David, would it be if the Bengals win and we somehow lose this game Sunday.
Well, I mean, we'll have a hell of a lot to talk about, I'll tell you that.
I mean, I'm all about trying to get the guys as healthy as you can, but you know, I think there's still an outside chance. You know, if it was like the Rams playing the Ravens or something like that, I'd say, okay, you know, give up on this, you know, of that happening or whatnot. But, I mean, I firmly believe there's a good shot at the Bengals knocking them off, you know, so it would just be...
Oh, yeah, no, I think you got to, you know, look, the line's under three, I think, now, and Cincinnati's at home. They finally were able to give enough tickets away that they got the blackout lifted, and they'll have a relatively full stadium. So, Cincinnati's got everything to play for. But the thing I'll tell you, and I've kind of been on this bandwagon, as you know, making my picks the last 4 or 5 weeks, that I think Cleveland has covered 3 of the last 4 or 4 of the last 5. They have been in every game they've played. Now, Seneca Wallace and Colt McCoy, you don't have a good quarterback between them. But Peyton Hillis is back, and they can do some things well. They, you know, we've seen them recently, so we know what kind of team they are. But I don't think this is a team that's going to roll over, but you certainly would like to have a game where you got, like the Rams last week, a team that's going nowhere, and if you get to them early, you maybe take the fight out of the dog.
Yeah, and, you know, I think Cleveland's still a dangerous team. I think their pass defense is still good. I know teams have been running on them more than passing anyways. You know, we kind of talked about that, I think, in the last time we played them and all. But this is a team, you know, teams like this are dangerous right now. Because, A, Seneca Wallace, I think, and it looks like Colt McCoy is not going to play in this game.
Yep.
Anyway, it looks like Seneca Wallace is going to start. You know, he's a much more wild card. There's not a lot of film on him from this year, of course. And I think, you know, I think he might present the Steelers a few challenges. Peyton Hillis, ever since we played them a few weeks ago, has been running the ball well. You know,
and Josh Cribbs is always dangerous.
Yeah, Josh Cribbs. Greg Little had the breakout game a few weeks ago. This is a team that can present the Steelers some problems here, especially when, you know, they're in they can't lose here, basically, by trying sneaky things, some fake punts, some weird trick plays or whatnot. And whenever you have a team that's kind of loosey-goosey like that, and you're trying to get some players maybe some rest and try to just get out of there healthy, it presents some challenges.
Yeah, and we'll have more about the Browns. I'm not going to be around this afternoon. I'm going to be on a bird out to Vegas. But Nate Ulrich, who was with us a month ago to preview the first Browns game, Dave will have Nate, who's the beat writer for the Browns, covering the Browns for the Akron Beacon Journal. So stay tuned for that for the second half of the show. Dave, anything else from the press conference? It was a pretty short press conference. Again, not to get on the Pittsburgh beat writers, but they missed a couple questions that I thought were pretty obvious. The one about why John Clay was in the game early on there at the 10-yard line, where he got his one carry and then didn't touch the ball again, as opposed to Isaac Redman being in there. A couple other things about Hines Ward that they didn't really touch on. Ed Bouchette continues to beat the drum that he feels like, and he has now kind of been less surreptitious about it. He has said that, you know, at the end of the day, it's Tomlin's decision. So when he says the coaches want him out of there, which is the phrase Ed has used, and he has said very clearly that he doesn't have any evidence of this other than Hines' playing time, but basically said the coaches want him out of there, is suggesting that Tomlin doesn't want Hines Ward around. I think with the understanding what doesn't want him around next year. Any more thoughts on that topic? Or we touched on the John Clay thing, but I know you thought maybe just throw him in there for the get the feel right away without really thinking about it.
I thought the John Clay thing is just, hey, rookie, get in there, you know, off the cuff. We kind of talked about that the other day. I'm not so concerned about Redman not getting the carry.
Yeah, down. No, I'm not concerned. I'm just curious as to the thought process.
Yeah, and I just think they wanted to, you know, the guy probably performed good in practice or whatnot. You know, first NFL game down there. Let's see what you got, kid. And on that play, you go back and watch that play. He made a great read on that play. The play was originally supposed to be one of those kind of counter plays with Kimo Otto coming inside there. That Heath Miller did all he could do to help clear out the hole. That wasn't there. Clay made a nice decision to bounce that thing outside, and a great read and react on his part. So, I think it'll give him some good confidence heading into training camp next year. As far as Hines Ward goes, we beat this like a dead horse, man. I'm not ready to rule him out not coming back next year. I think he's going to have to take a pay cut to do so. I think there'll be a concerted effort this week to get him to five catches. It would not be surprising to see, you know, a couple of real cheap completions early in this game against Cleveland on the opening drive, maybe a bubble screen, maybe one of those flip passes in the backfield that's 100% high success type stuff. They're going to get him his five catches. I think they're going to do everything they can early in this game to do it, because let's face it, late in the games, even the Rams people, you know, everybody was saying cover Ward late in the game because it was pretty obvious what they were trying to do at that point. So if you're going to get him his five catches, you better have it done by close to halftime with him only needing one or two in the second half.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. So let's leave the Hines Ward stuff for the postseason for the rest of the year.
Yeah, plenty of time to talk about it. What about the Pro Bowl selections?
Yeah, the Pro Bowl stuff. Let's get into that, because I was tweeting about this a fair bit yesterday afternoon, and my thought was that the Steelers had four locks, and the four locks are the four guys who made it, and it was Ben, Pouncey, Polamalu, and Mike Wallace. And I'm not at all surprised Mike Wallace was named a starter. And what we find here, and this is especially true in baseball, and it's you know, maybe less true in football, but it's something we pay attention to. What you do in baseball for the first 100 games of a 162 game season, people generally just assume that that's what happens the rest of the year. So you have kind of planted in their mind by the time you get to the All-Star break the kind of year you're having, and it's very difficult to change kind of the public perception of how you're doing. And we see that with Mike Wallace. There's no question that the first seven games of the year he was outstanding, a bunch of touchdowns, you know, he was getting 40 plus yard catch every game, and he put it in people's minds as being a guy who was right on the borderline of making the Pro Bowl last year. He was signed, sealed, and delivered to the Pro Bowl this year, I think, in those first 7 weeks. Obviously, Antonio Brown had the reverse. He was a pretty unknown guy coming into the year. He wasn't picked up on anybody's fantasy team. And then all of a sudden he gets a TD catch, and then he explodes in the second half. And I really thought he had an outside chance of being the fourth receiver. I think he had like a 5% chance. I would say he probably finished seventh or eighth in the voting. But I have to say I'm thrilled that he made it. I'm shocked he made it over Joe McKnight. I think Joe McKnight probably feels rightly snubbed this morning with a 32-yard average on 32 kick returns. But I'm thrilled to see Antonio Brown make it as a all-around player. He's clearly a better player than Joe McKnight, but I'm not sure he can say he had a better year as a return man, although he did, you know, return punts, which McKnight did very little of.
Polamalu and Pouncey are two interesting names. Are in because they pretty much had won their positional voting, okay? You've got the coaches and the players also that vote on this thing, along with the fans. Now, both Polamalu and Pouncey won the fan vote for their positions in the AFC. Mike Wallace, they had an interview with him earlier this past week where he said, hey, when players vote, they're voting for their own. You have to think the coaches are as well, too. So basically, it's basically coming down to fan vote on this thing.
No. You're not allowed to vote for the guys on your own team.
I thought you were.
No. You can't vote for guys on your own team.
Okay. Well, maybe I'm wrong there. I thought he had said something along those lines that everybody votes for their own. I'll have to double check that. But Ward was pretty much, Wallace was pretty much saying, hey, look, you know, it's a joke of, now maybe it's the coaches that can't vote for their own, but.
Yeah, I think it's coaches and players can't, but you can't vote for guys on your
own
team.
Yeah, we'll have to research that. You know, I thought he was quoted in one of these interviews.
Well, then Mike got it wrong. So the deal is the fan vote is a very small, I think it's maybe a third of the thing. If that much, maybe it's 25%.
It is a third. They divided up a third, I think, between the fan vote, the coaches vote, and the players
vote.
Yeah,
I mean, the vote wouldn't make any sense to have players and coaches being able to vote for your own guys, because then, you know, it wouldn't be a good vote. So you can't vote for your own guys. They try not to have the fan vote be too much because that's a popularity contest. So you know, let's look at the roster, the quarterbacks, Brady, Roethlisberger, and Rivers. I'll tell you something. I tweeted this morning that it shows you the level of play in the AFC at the quarterback position that Phil Rivers is the third guy. He clearly made it a reputation, and he clearly is more talented than Flacco or Sanchez. But, man, I'm pretty damn sure he didn't have the third best year as quarterback in the AFC.
Who's that, Rivers?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He all those interceptions at key moments in the game and all like that. Yeah, I'm okay with Ben being in there. I think Ben deserves to be in there.
Oh, no question.
Rivers, absolutely not.
And then Ray Rice, Maurice Jones-Drew, Arian Foster. I don't think anybody can argue with those three guys. Very good choices at running back. We don't see much fullback play, but Vonta Leach is a solid fullback. And then the receivers were Welker and Wallace as the starters. I think that, you know, those are solid picks. A little surprised at the guys who were 3 and 4, A.J. Green and Brandon Marshall. Very happy for A.J. Green. We've saw him. You and I both think the guy's going to be a beast. Really good. I think Vincent Jackson probably didn't get the nod because he missed some games, and that kind of whole contract with the CBA being negotiated, all of a sudden Vincent Jackson was standing up waving a flag for himself, and he might have pissed off some of the players and coaches by doing that. So I was a little surprised he didn't make it. But again, tough to argue with those four guys. What did you think of the receiver position?
A.J. Green, yeah, I totally agree with that. No problem with that. Mike Wallace, you know, if he's not double covered, if they don't start rolling those coverages over to him like they did halfway through the season, he would just, you know, we'd be talking possibly about 2,000 yards this year for him. And, you know, luckily Antonio Brown was there to pick up the slack there. And I just researched this real quick about the voting. You are correct that players and coaches are not allowed to vote for themselves. Maybe what I heard Wallace say in that interview was they vote for their college teammates and all like that as well, too. So they're voting for their boys, you know.
I don't know. I mean, but you know, going through the list, it certainly doesn't seem like there are a lot of bad selections here. For those who
do you think Troy and Pouncey belong?
Well, you know, at the center position, the guy who would be the third guy would be Alex Mack of the Browns. It is tough on a team that's 4-11, and without Peyton Hillis there putting up big yards, it's probably tough to vote him in there. I guess you could make an argument that Pouncey missed some time, but he's a young guy who I think, you know, it's clearly somewhat reputation. Now, clearly Troy is a lot reputation, but I still think he makes enough. He does make splash plays. He's a game-changing type guy, and as long as the Steeler defense continues to play at a high level, particularly with Harrison and Woodley missing a lot of time, you're going to put a guy in there, and Troy's going to be that guy. So, I don't watch enough game tape of all the guys in the AFC, but I think I've been as big a detractor of Troy as most anybody over the past 2 years, but he's still a great player. And, I think I don't have any problem with him making it there.
What about the Texans center? Who is that, Chris Myers over there? I kind of think that guy.
Yeah, you're right. There's some guys, you know, what they always say is you get your first Pro Bowl the year after you earned it.
Yeah, you know, Troy probably got in there a little bit on name recognition, the fan votes and all like that. It's hard to vote against that, you know, along with Pouncey. I can see both those two guys in there. I think a lot of people there are some good arguments out there for some other people. But Troy, hey, let's face it, if he's dropped 5 or 6 interceptions this year right in his hand. So if he makes those, he's a slam dunk far as that goes. Antonio Brown. I wonder how much of him being a kick returner, his receiving stats played into the fact.
100%.
You know,
100%.
Got into that, but.
Absolutely, 100%.
I tell you who got snubbed, though. Ike Taylor. I mean, Ike Taylor got
snubbed. Well, the thing is, you know, you say he got snubbed, but you got Darrell Revis, you got Champ Bailey, and Jonathan Joseph. Jonathan Joseph has changed that defense around 100% for Houston. 180-degree turn. Champ Bailey would be the guy maybe that shouldn't be there, but it's hard to say he got snubbed when those are the three guys.
Okay, then not even an alternate? Yeah, I mean, not even.
Well, I haven't seen the alternate list, actually. I haven't seen that.
Yeah, none of the Steelers. I haven't seen the complete alternate list, but I know that James Harrison is a first alternate, Ryan Clark's a second alternate, and Lamar Woodley's a second alternate. So
okay, yep, so he didn't make alternate. Yeah, that's tough. That's tough.
You know, that. I mean, let's hope, you know, we hope and pray that the Steelers don't even have to play in the Pro Bowl.
Right.
But, and you know how people will bounce out and injuries and all like that. Maybe I
get 6 interceptions one of these years and gets the nod.
And unfortunately, I think that's the way it goes with cornerbacks. I don't think they look at the coverage stats. And a lot of this has to do with stats. Everybody just looks at stats because, let's face it, everybody can't, you know, watch every game you know, fans and all like that, and fans are going to vote for their own guys. And if ever there was a year that Ike deserved it, this was it. Ryan Clark too, coming up on 100 tackles for the season.
You cannot convince me Ryan Clark deserves to go to the Pro Bowl.
No, I would say as an alternate, I'm fine with the alternate listing.
I'll tell you, just going through the defense here, it's a good defense. Listen, Freeney and Carter as the ends with Dumerville as the backup. Nada and Wilfork interior with Seymour as the backup. Suggs and Von Miller on the outside with Tom Bahali as the backup. Ray Lewis with Derek Johnson as the backup. Revis and Bailey with Joseph as the backup. Reed and Polamalu with Weddle as the backup. That's a damn good list of players there. I don't think they missed on anybody.
What about Ray Lewis?
I think Ray Lewis the past 2 years hadn't been pretty good, hadn't been very good. But I thought this year, the first 10 games, he was fantastic. Now, I'm not sure you should make the Pro Bowl if he missed 4 games, but he did.
He's gotten his ankles broke quite a few times this year, just not the same Ray Lewis. Once again, a name recognition on that. I wasn't happy with that selection. But, yeah, outside of that, I mean, it you can make arguments, sure, and people are going to make arguments every year, the snubs and all like that. I would have traded the Marquise Pouncey one for an Ike Taylor one. Maybe it's just sentimental there, but I just thought Ike had just...
Yeah, and I'll tell you, this is one thing I think Peter King does very well, is he goes out, and I think he spends a lot of time talking to position coaches and opposing team play, guys who played against players, and he puts together a list that's very different, his all-pro list and his list of guys, I'll be interested to see that when that comes out in the next week or two.
Yeah, and let's see what else we got here going forward here after the Pro Bowl selection. Now, we got some new news about the Marcus Gilbert benching this past week. Bob Labriola on his podcast yesterday said that Gilbert had arrived to the Steelers facility. He wanted to say it was Friday morning. Gilbert got there early, went and got breakfast, and I don't know, probably had some pancakes or something. And the meeting still hadn't started by the time he finished breakfast, evidently went to the players' lounge, sat in a chair, and subsequently fell asleep. So, and that made him evidently late for that meeting and thus the benching. Do you like the way Tomlin handled that with him this past week?
Well, I hadn't heard the story, so it's news to me. I think maybe the first thing I might do if I'm Marcus Gilbert is, hey, if it's 2 minutes before the meeting and you see me in the facility, how about I make sure Trey Essex or somebody's tapping me on the shoulder, Jonathan Scott, hey, could you just, you know, find me wherever? It's an unfortunate incident. I because I hadn't heard about it before, you know, it clearly wasn't a DUI or anything like that. So I think it's a pretty stern, pretty stern rebuke by Tomlin, if that is how the events unfolded. So, yeah, I'm a little surprised it's that stern. I mean, the guy's there and he's getting some breakfast and, but, you know, won't happen again. So,
well, what we don't know is, you know, Tomlin kept saying the preparation and all too. We don't know really if Gilbert might have had a bad week of practice to go along with it. And this was just a straw that broke the camel's back type thing. But, yep, you know, I'm fine with it. Tomlin sat down Rashard Mendenhall back in, 2009 against the Bengals and for not being on the details, as Tomlin called it that week. And Mendenhall came back and responded the following week against the Chargers. That was that game they rushed for 165 yards in. So, yep.
You also wonder if, you know, maybe something similar has happened once or twice before, and the Rams game is the right game to do it. So,
sure, absolutely.
You know, all those things, you never know what kind of mind games Mike Tomlin might be playing. Dave, I wanted to give a shout out. We got a great letter today, and I know you've seen it, but for our listeners, Al Scovern is a guy who listens to the podcast, and he's got his stepson is over in Mali, West Africa, doing stuff for the Peace Corps, and they are big fans of the Terrible Podcast, and they wrote us a really nice note today, and actually his stepson wrote an article about his experience being a Steeler fan in West Africa, so we're looking forward to seeing that and getting a read of that, because I'm sure that's a great story. So just wanted to give a shout-out to Al. He didn't actually mention his stepson's name, but thanks for listening to the show, and we appreciate it, the nice feedback, and we look forward to getting your letter.
Yeah, I'll post that up on Steelers Depot. I think that would be great. You know, David, it's fantastic to the power of the internet. I mean, we have people from Wales and, oh, man, all over the place.
Romania. We've heard from people from a lot of places. So if you're out there listening, shoot us a note and let us know where you are.
It's just amazing of how far out outreach you can have like this and all. And you know, we sit here and we do this show, you know, three times a week, and You know, it's just me and David talking. You just don't realize sometimes that how far of an outreach that it makes. And, you know, we're not perfect on this show, but you know, luckily I've got David here to help me through a lot of this with his radio background and all.
Well, we have a good time. That's
yeah,
all, that's
we
all
have
that
a good time.
Right?
We hope we get the good information, the good talking points out to you. As always, if you have any questions or want us to touch on something, we're going to be touching, of course, on the salary cap and the draft needs and all like that. But I, with the season still winding down and playoffs and week to week games and all like that, let's hope the Steelers get the bye this week, and then we can kind of fit in some extra talk, the week of the bye week there going forward and all. But we certainly do appreciate the note. And as soon as I get that letter from them, I'll post up on SteelersDepot.com for everybody to read.
And stay tuned here for the second half of the show. Dave will be talking to Nate Ulrich of the Akron Beacon Journal, who we had on about a month ago, and we'll get a little insight on what's going on in the Browns as they prepare for their last game of the season.
Welcome back to the Terrible Podcast. I'm pleased to be joined once again. We had him on a few weeks ago before the Steelers took on the Cleveland Browns, and it's a couple of weeks later here. We are welcoming back Nate Ulrich, the beat writer from the Cleveland Browns, for the Akron Beacon Journal. You can follow Nate on Twitter at @ABJ_Browns. Nate, welcome back to the Terrible Podcast today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Let's get right to it here. It seems like just a few weeks ago we got done with you guys, and you turn around, here we are, week 17, and kind of an important game for the Steelers, depending on what happens between the Bengals and the Ravens. Of course, a lot happened in the game last time out with the Steelers and the Browns. First of all, can you give us an update where the Browns stand on an injury standpoint? From an injury standpoint, I know Colt McCoy has not been cleared to practice yet and probably not going to play, but can you give us an update as far as the injury report goes?
Yeah, obviously Colt, like you mentioned, is the big one. He has not been medically cleared to play. Coach Pat Shurmur today said that Colt takes a daily test, a baseline concussion test, and he has not passed it, so he's not been approved to come back. So it looks like, you know, today's Wednesday, looks like as game time approaches here, Seneca Wallace will eventually be named the starter. That's the expectation right now. He hasn't officially ruled McCoy out, but like I said, it's not looking like he's going to play, not looking like he's going to be able to come back this season. And other injuries of note, wide receiver Jordan Norwood has a concussion. He didn't practice today. He suffered a concussion against the Cardinals, which was a week ago, a week from this past Sunday. And Kaluka Maiava has a broken left hand, but he's actually he's a starting weak side linebacker. He's actually planning to play with it. He's going to have a cast on it, and he said that he's done it before and it shouldn't be a problem. So those are the main injuries of note. And Tony Pashos, I guess if you want to consider him, a guy on the injury report to look at, he's also going to be there just with an illness, though. So he was sick yesterday, didn't practice today. Nothing to indicate that he won't come back. Shurmur said he expects him to come back, but he's a starting right tackle. So that's about it for the injuries.
Let's see. Since that last game, Seneca Wallace has been the quarterback for the Browns the last two games, and I think we're all aware. I know I went back and watched the game, and that end of the first half there was pretty much had to be a nightmare, as far as a miscommunication and that goes. Outside of that, though, how has Wallace played?
I thought he played pretty well in his first start of the season against the Cardinals, but this past Saturday against the Ravens, he had a pretty bad game. Obviously, the miscommunication and the glaring breakdown at the end of the first half that you alluded to is one thing, but he threw an interception on the first series of the game that was just bad mechanics. I mean, he basically felt pressure, started backpedaling, and threw probably the weakest pass I've seen this season. to Muhammad Massakoy, and who actually was open and could have gained a first down if the ball was delivered the way it should have been, but it wasn't. It was a poor pass, and it was picked off by the Ravens. And you know, Seneca, he's a guy who knows the West Coast offense very well, obviously from his long career with the Seattle Seahawks, and when Browns president Mike Holmgren was the coach there, Seneca became fluent in that system. So he's a guy who knows the offense, and you would expect it to run crisp with him in there, even though he is a career backup. That was the case against Arizona. They did move the ball, and they were effective at times. But against the Ravens, he took a big step back, in my opinion. I feel like he was just inaccurate. He was throwing on the run a lot, off balance, backpedaling, and just didn't do a good job facing pressure, staying in the pocket, delivering throws with guys coming after him. And obviously, you have to do that in the NFL.
Most definitely. Now, Peyton Hillis, you go back and watch these last couple of games. I know the last time the Steelers played him, he was kind of banged up going into that game. He gave it a go anyways. But he looks a lot healthier the last two games. And is that what you're seeing? I mean, is the blocking better? Is it just Hillis just healthier?
Well, I think the offensive line has kind of turned the corner lately. But I think you hit it on the head. He's just healthy for the first time this season, really. He said he feels really, you know, heading into Arizona, the game against the Cardinals 2 weeks ago, he said he's felt better. He felt better than he had all season, and he rushed for 99 yards against them. And then he came back last week against the Ravens, and he had a pretty good game. He rushed over 100 yards again, and so 99 yards, and last Sunday he had 24 carries for 112 yards and a touchdown against the Ravens. Obviously, everybody knows the Ravens are a tough defense and a tough run defense. So, you know, the left hamstring injury bothered him all season. Then he, as you mentioned, heading into the game earlier this month against the Steelers, he was also bothered by a hip injury. And he said that bothered him against the Steelers. He felt that injury during the game. And he just, as of late, has started to feel better with obviously the hamstring and the hip. So this is a guy that you would like to see all season if you're a Browns fan. This is a guy who you would say is worthy of the Madden cover. And he's been missing all season because of these injuries and other distractions and all that drama that he's become involved with. And, you know, all the talk about his unresolved contract issue certainly played a huge role in all that. But the last couple games he's making his push. He's actually played very well, and the offense looks a whole lot different when he's rolling.
Absolutely. I agree. Going back and watching those couple of games the last 2 weeks, for sure. Of course, the big talk, James Harrison was suspended for one game after his helmet-to-helmet hit on Colt McCoy a couple of games back there. And first of all, what has really been the reaction of the players in the Browns locker room to that? And I noticed that you guys were able to ask Mike Tomlin about James Harrison today on the conference call. So can you hit on both those things?
Yeah, the reaction in the Browns locker room has been one that, I guess the best way to say it is, they've been kind of careful and they've chosen their words wisely. And you know, you can tell they didn't appreciate the hit. They don't like it. But they're not willing to flat out say Harrison's a dirty player. They're not willing to flat out say that they're going to retaliate. In fact, today, a lot of the guys are saying, you know, Joe Thomas was the one who actually said this. Personal vendettas really don't have a place because it detracts from the team's goal of winning. So, you know, and then Alex Mack today was asked flat out, is Harrison a dirty player? And I counted on my recorder. He paused for 7 seconds, and he said, I mean, he's getting fined. That was it. So no one's flat out, you know, saying, you know, Harrison deserves to get taken out or anything like that. And I don't see him doing anything like that. But they obviously don't appreciate. They have, you know, they obviously are disappointed that, you know, things went the way they did. And then Harrison isn't, you know, knocked out three Browns in basically 1 year with big hits. If you go back to that game in October 2010. And Coach Tomlin today, as far as that conference call with the Cleveland media, he just defended Harrison and said he's not a dirty player, flat out. I know the guy. I've been around him for such a long time, and he's not a dirty player. I think sometimes there are, you know, violent collisions in football, and, you know, he has his players back, and rightfully so. I mean, I think he was even the one, in fairness to him, that he came out after the league issued its one-game suspension and said that it was illegal and he needs to face the consequences. But at the same time, he's going to defend his guy now, and he's not going to throw his guy under the bus and say he's dirty or anything like that. So that's, you know, that's basically what I get from what Tomlin said publicly, and I don't blame him. I don't think as a head coach, I don't think you should go and say your guy's dirty, and I think you should have your guys back. But I think he was also correct in saying that he needed to, it was just for him to face consequences.
Ben Roethlisberger today, of course, Ben was injured, suffered that high ankle sprain on the sack as he rolled out in the first half there, late in the first half, by former Steelers Scott Paxton. Roethlisberger was asked kind of today by the Pittsburgh media, I think, and he said he hasn't heard from Scott Paxton, you know, since the hit and all like that. And I don't know if Ben was kind of alluding that he should have or what. To me, it was just a clean hit. Ankle got kind of caught up underneath him. And it is what it is. What is Paxton's kind of attitude or kind of remarks been since that hit? Has he really had anything to say about it?
You know, I don't know exactly. Other than what he said after the game, I mean, he was really complimentary of Roethlisberger and saying, you know, obviously the former teammates, and he's saying what a great player he is. He had no intent to hurt him, and it was just one of those things. So I really don't think that, you know, I don't know what Roethlisberger thinks about it, but I don't think Paxton thought that, hey, I'm going to go and try to twist his ankle or get him, you know, have him suffer a high ankle sprain or anything like that. I think that it was a pretty just a pretty routine play, and he got, you know, obviously he got hurt on it. But yeah, I don't think there was any ill will. I don't sense any hint that there was any ill will from Paxton.
Yeah, Scott Brown continued on in one of his tweets today, and Roethlisberger said he doesn't know if Paxton should have been flagged for a low hit on the quarterback, but Ben also continued on to say, I never really went back and saw if he got pushed down or went low. And Ben continued on, plus it's me. They don't call that stuff on me anyway. So, you know, that might there's probably nothing to that whatsoever. They probably just made sure to trying to take the angle against Paxton there. So we'll see how that plays out. Hines Ward is 5 catches short of 1,000 for his career heading into this final game. I know the Browns have to be well aware of this. Is this going to be tough for Hines to get these catches in this final game of the season?
Well, the Browns' pass defense is probably the team's strong suit. So I think it might be. I mean, he only had one catch in the December 8th game, and he fumbled. But, yeah, I think that that it could be challenging, and I think the Browns, the pass defense isn't maybe as good as the ranking would suggest, you know, throughout the season. And I think I talked about that with you guys last time, you know.
Right.
The pass defense is, you know, it is what it is. It's ranked first in the league for most of the season. It's ranked second now, and you know, is that because teams are able to run on the Browns a lot? Well, yeah. I mean, it is to some extent. That's you know, when teams are able to run, and they don't pass as much, then obviously your passing yards allowed per game aren't going to be as high. So the pass defense, but having said that, the pass defense is pretty good, I think. I mean, in terms of if you wanted to identify a strength of the team, of a 4-11 team, if you wanted to say that the 4-11 team was good in some areas, it would be the secondary for the Browns. So, yeah, I don't know. I think Hines might have a tough time. I think the key to this game, and you guys, I'm sure, are well aware, but I thought seeing what the Steelers did to the Rams this past weekend kind of at least hints to me that they're going to try to run it big time against the Browns this week with, you know, whether or not Ben plays. Even if he plays, he's obviously not 100%. So I would think they would lean heavily on the running game this week. And the Browns have obviously, like I just said, had problems stopping the run all season. But in the past two games have kind of turned the corner. And then they actually held Ray Rice to under 100 yards after he ran wild on him in the first meeting and ran for 204 yards. So the run defense has kind of been better in the last couple of weeks. And I see the Steelers are running the ball a little bit better. So that's actually, I think, going to be an interesting matchup. You know, aside from, obviously, the Hines Ward milestone is a big deal to Steelers fans, and rightfully so. But, yeah, I'm looking at the running matchup, too.
Yeah, I agree because, you know, reportedly they want to get Ben about 25 to 30 snaps in this game just to kind of make sure they knock a little bit of, you know, he doesn't have any rust before the playoffs and all. But on the flip side, you still have that ankle. He reportedly practiced full today along with Pouncey as well. So, you know, it looks like we're going to have those two guys back. I wouldn't expect them to play the whole game, but if they do play even more and a half, I would expect a lot of running the ball. They did have success last week against, it was the Rams, but there were glimpses of us actually running to the left a little bit better last week as well, too. We haven't seen that a lot this year either. So, yeah, I'm with you. I would expect the Steelers to run early and often in this game, but I've said that before in other games, too, this year, and they've come out throwing, so we'll have to wait and see on that. You know, when you look at the Browns overall, you go back over their season this year, I don't really think they're as bad as what, you know, really their record or most people indicate. I know they've had some glitches here, you know, especially in the first half against the Ravens this past week and all, but it really seems, you know, if they, outside of some quarterback play, and you know, they've got some young receivers and all as well too, it doesn't look like they're as bad as really what they're advertised. Would you agree with that?
Well, I think to some extent, I think that they have a 4-11 record because they have choked in crunch time and failed to make plays that the most teams you think would make. I mean, you alluded to the debacle late in the first half against the Ravens when they had it right there with 57 seconds left on the Ravens 8-yard line, and they didn't score any points because Seneca Wallace hands off on second and goal at the Ravens 3 instead of spiking the ball to stop the clock. So, you know, it's that kind of bonehead stuff that people here are just scratching their heads and saying, what are these guys doing? They could have won a few more games this season. You know, in the season opener, the first game of the year, they had the Bengals right where they wanted them. They had the lead late in the fourth quarter, and then the defense didn't line up in time. The Bengals used a quick snap, and Bruce Gradkowski, who was playing quarterback at the time, hit A.J. Green with a touchdown pass. He was uncovered. So, and then there's been, you know, issues with the long snapping. Ryan Pomprion, the longtime long snapper here, was cut because he had some poor snaps this season that cost him points that could have led to victories. And you know, so it's just those little things make you think maybe they aren't quite as bad as the record would suggest, because really, if those basic routine plays, you know, went the way that you think they normally would go, then they would have won some of those games. So it is a weird thing. The team has repeatedly shot itself in the foot and has repeatedly lost games that seem to be that they should have been won. So yeah, I mean, I think you can look at that, and I think you can also look at it as, you know, there are still several signs. Despite that, there are several signs that suggest this team is still a long way away. And it's a very young team, and it's missing some very key pieces.
A couple more questions from my guest, Nate Ulrich here, beat writer for the Browns for the Akron Beacon Journal. You can follow Nate on Twitter at @ABJ_Browns. Pat Shurmur, is Holmgren going to stick with him one more year?
Oh, absolutely. He's already said that publicly, that Shurmur will absolutely be the coach next season. And he even went as far as to say Shurmur will be the coach here for a long time. So he's a rookie head coach, never been a head coach at any level, let alone the NFL. So there are a lot of things he's going through for the first time this season. And Shurmur is Holmgren's handpicked coach. That's the guy he wanted here. That's the guy, you know, who runs his system, the West Coast offense. They have that philosophy in common. Shurmur goes way back with general manager Tom Heckert. They were together with the Philadelphia Eagles for several years. And they're going to be with him. So, you know, Browns fans, a lot of them are furious with Shurmur because of the mistakes we just talked about. And, you know, some of the clock mismanagement against the Ravens just brings all those emotions back to the forefront, you know, from the fans. But the bottom line is he's not going anywhere. So the fans are going to have to watch him and stick with him and hope that he improves next season and beyond that, because they're going to be stuck with this guy for a while.
Of course, the final game here, the Browns would love nothing more than to knock off the Steelers. Final week of the season, it would be even sweeter for them if it would end up costing the Steelers the division, say the Bengals beat the Ravens. With all that said, should we expect them to pull out all the stops this week? I know the Rams did a fake punt against us last week. They're really, you know, they've got nothing to lose. Will we see some trickery? Will we see some things that we probably haven't seen from the Browns throughout this season on Sunday?
I think so. I think the Steelers are going to get the Browns' best shot. And really, I think that they got pretty much close to that in the December 8th game. I think, you know, going into that game, I thought the Steelers were going to roll. Well, the Browns, as you guys know, the Browns played them really tight, and that was a close game. And obviously, could have gone either way, and you know, the Browns had them right there until, you know, Colt suffered the concussion as a result of the hit from Harrison, re-entered the game, and then threw that interception there, and it all fizzled for the Browns. But they're right there with them, and they're 0-5 in the AFC North this season, but they've played tight, close games with the Bengals, the Steelers, and the Ravens. So I think they're going to give the Steelers the best shot, like I said, but you know, at the end of the day, I still think the Steelers win this one. I just think there's too much at stake for them to allow themselves to be upset by, you know, one of the worst teams in the NFL.
So the Steelers win, but they probably won't cover. Is that what you probably think?
Yeah, I think
three or four.
Yeah,
points?
I would say that. Yeah, that's where I'm going.
All right, good deal. Anything else we should know about before we wrap you up, Nate?
I think that's about it. I guess the main things, again, to look for are, I think the Browns, how they're going to face Roethlisberger, and I guess just the fact that, you know, if he's going to play those 25 to 30 snaps, I'm just real interested to see what the approach is going to be from the Steelers and how that's going to affect the Browns' defense. So, I mean, that, like I said, that's the matchup I'm looking for. Are we going to see, you know, the Steelers that air it out to, you know, Mike Wallace and use Antonio Brown as a receiving threat and have those guys dominate? Or are we going to see a different kind of approach from the Steelers with Mendenhall really just pounding the Browns? So that's the matchup I'm looking for. And, I'm interested to see how that plays out.
And good stuff as always. Good analysis, Nate. We appreciate you being on twice with us this year on the Terrible Podcast. And as we get into the off season and all, you know, we'd like to have you back on to talk some draft stuff and some Browns needs, you know, after we get out of the combine and all like that. So I want to thank you for coming on the Terrible Podcast once again. And you do a fantastic job, and it's been our pleasure to have you.
Oh, thanks. It's always a pleasure.
And that's Nate Ulrich, Cleveland Browns beat writer for the Akron Beacon Journal. You can follow him on Twitter at @ABJ_Browns. You can read his stuff online at the Browns.ohio.com. He also has a blog up there. So, Nate, we appreciate it, and you have a good day.
You too.